You're listening to the Hypno Fairy Godmother Show with Shirley Yance, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Hypno Fairy Godmother Show. I am, in fact, Shirley, a clinical hypnotherapist here in Southern California, and a glitter and rainbow girl going way, way, way back. My specialty is working with the LGBTQIA plus community, the BDSM and kink communities, and I wouldn't have it any other way. If you don't feel like you have a tribe or you have somebody to talk to, know that you always have someone that'll talk to me. And, you know, I like to have some fun, which we are definitely going to do today. Maybe you get a little bit of inspiration and maybe bring a smile to your face. So we all know how I start my show. So before we bring in my guests, so I need everybody in a safe place. And by safe, I mean not driving, no heavy machinery, not working on a project. You can always listen to the show, pick it up later. But I need you in a nice, safe place. I need a nice, deep breath. Deep from your diaphragm. And exhale with a smile. Now, the second part of the beginning of my show, which is my second favorite part of my show. Okay, I need everybody still in safe place. Wiggle your toes. Come on, wiggle, wiggle your toes. Inside your shoes, outside of your shoes, wiggle those toes. Now, wiggle your buns. Yes, I said it. Wiggle your buns. Squeeze them in and out, wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. And for some of you, don't go any farther than that. Now, the next thing I need to do is take one more deep, deep breath. And the reason why I do the wiggle your buns is because you can't do that without smiling. You can't be in a room or in a car or wherever, and you're starting to stress out and you start wiggling your buns, and the next thing you know, you're smiling. So that's why we do that. The next thing we're going to do is one more nice deep breath from your abdomen. And you know why I have you do that. And that's so if you do start in any way having a panic attack, you're getting a full deep breath. You're not getting some little deep breath up here. You're getting a full deep breath. And that's what we need to have. Only this time when we exhale, I want you to give me a short affirmation that just keeps you going. I tend to use I got this because it works for me. Other people are, I'm fabulous. People are like, just any short affirmation that you need to keep you going. And put this affirmation everywhere because that is your affirmation for the day. And remember, I do have my Patreon site. So on my Patreon site, I have my little affirmations. So if you can't come up with an affirmation, you know, we have the little cubes and the little blocks and stuff like that that can help you come up with one just in case you need one. Just throwing that out there. If you get a chance, roll your shoulders, maybe roll your neck a minute. And in less than 4 minutes, 3.5 minutes, you have now relaxed everything from your toes to your nose, all the way up. Rolling it around. And what did that cost you? That cost you nothing. And you're in this safe place and you've loosened up and the world is great. So like I said, remember, if you can't come up with an affirmation, I have little tools to help you out. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that my Weeble Kung Fu comes with lots of little tips and tricks. That one came out really well, didn't it? Anyway, go back. You can listen to the other shows. You can get those little tricks, and everything's going to be great. So today is a special day for me because today I have the glamorous and wonderful Sister Unity of the Sisters of the Los Angeles. Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence to help me. I know. Sister Unity, it's my girl. So how are you doing today?
I'll have to call you back.
Oh.
Oh, Shirley, I thought this was a private chat. I brought all of my chickens and a tub of coconut oil. I didn't realize this was public. Oh, everybody.
Okay, we're going to have to put the coconut oil. Yeah, we're going to have to put the coconut oil back away for just a little while.
Just a couple. I was making some Thai Indian fusion tikka masala larb.
Yeah, well, I've seen some of your recipes online, and some of them look really good. So,
oh, I know. Love recipes that are really simple. My favorite one is for an elaborate dish, just serves 20, was used in Victorian households. Step one, buy some food. Step two, have someone cook the food. Step three, eat the food.
You know what? We always laughed when we got married. People were like, what are your specialties? And I'm like, mine is takeout. Hers is, you know, it's like takeout and pickup. That's what we do. We deliver it or somebody picks it up. I don't care.
Mine is suffrage for minority votes.
Oh, well, yours is much better. So for those of you that don't know a little bit about the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, can you give us kind of a little up? I know. But some people may not know, and we need to get them
blasphemers.
In.
They're going to burn in the fires of hell with little cocktails. the sisters are basically, the important thing is that the sisters are an LGBTQIA, but also really anyone who feels disempowered, doesn't have a voice, or is being oppressed, rights group, a civil rights group, I think it'd be fair to say. It started in San Francisco in 1979 with three guys who threw on some actual nuns' habits from actual deceased nuns from a convent in Iowa City. And they went out around San Francisco, and they got such a positive reaction to, you know, hairy-chested men with beards at the time, in nuns' habits, that they were like, oh, we've really got something that's fun and catches attention. And so they put it to use with, at the time, gay rights activism. And then the AIDS epidemic hit, and they held the first candlelight vigil for AIDS, one of the first safe sex pamphlets with safe sex information was produced by the sisters. And they had some of the first AIDS fundraisers because the government wasn't lifting a finger to help people dying by the thousands of AIDS. So they started to do fundraisers to help the burgeoning organizations that were helping, you know, usually from our own community, for our own community. And then that really just continued forward, the combination of activism, charitable fundraising for our community, but also always infused with this sort of philosophy that was germinated out of the archetype that we borrowed of being spiritually aware, whatever that means to each one individual sister, and bringing the heart into focus, bringing our heart into our fun, frivolity, joy. I mean, silliness is our trademark. Even when we're, you know, when we fight for our lives, we always, our method is to use humor and joy. But to infuse it with heart and to come from our hearts and to encourage and offer opening opportunities to other people's hearts. Because we feel that when there's joy, humor, and heart in the discourses, even the political discourses of our society, it's more civil, certainly it's more fun. And also there is less violence, less oppression, less othering.
And it's the othering that seems to cause the problems these days.
I mean, that's just basic spiritual philosophy. You find it in everything from mystic Christianity, Kabbalah, Hinduism, yoga, Buddhism, Sufism. It's just at the base of all spiritual paths. When you separate the sense of people or people and planet or yourself and the divine, then you get like alienation, violence, misunderstanding. And when you have recognition of each other, recognition of nature, recognition and respect of connections to the divine, connections to nation, connections to each other, things just get better.
They do. So when do you first remember celebrating Pride?
My first Pride was in 1982 in San Francisco. I grew up in Massachusetts and Maine. And I was on a trip. I competed in the National Forensic League speech team in San Francisco in 82. And I won 10th in the nation in my category of humorous interpretation. And my sister had moved there in 73 from the Boston area. And so I took an extra week and I stayed with her. Well, she was one of the sort of founding members of the punk community and doing punk music since like 1975 onward. She was in a band called The Mutants. And if you're from the San Francisco area and you're a little older, you might remember them. So I was staying in this. They have this two-story warehouse on the second and third floor down. It's a glass tower now, but it was down across from the bus station. Real dusty, ratty place. And they'd have 500-person parties with four bands, one at each end of each floor. It was fantastic. So one day we hear this, like, screaming and shouting. And we're like, what the hell is going on? And we walk outside and we look down the street. And you could, like, three blocks down was Market. And you could. We walked down to Market Street. And it was this throngs of crowds watching a parade. We're like, what the hell? Parade. And so we're watching. And my sister's like, oh, yeah, I heard about this. Some kind of like gay pride parade. And I was like, and I hadn't come out to her yet. I came out to myself and a few friends, but not to her yet. And we watched. She's like, you know what? You stay and watch. I'm going to go back to the house. So I stood there just electrified by the things I saw. I mean, my sense of what the gay world was exploded wide open. There were Samoans. I was like, how cool is that? There were gay Native Americans. I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And then there were gay fathers that rolled by and I was like, you could do that? you know, all I knew was like, you know, what Time and Newsweek magazine said about gays at the time.
Exactly.
And then the sisters rolled by. And so it was my first gay pride and my first exposure to the sisters. And I was electrified by what I saw. The iconoclasm, the flipping the finger at an institution that had oppressed us, beaten us, humiliated us, murdered us for centuries, for millennia, being sent up, being satirized. And in a gay way and in a flamboyant way and in a funny, the humor. There was Sister Boom Boom riding in the back of a car like the politicians do. And she had a big dildo and she was sort of blessing the crowd with this enormous dildo. And just the combination of all of that freedom and humor and the sort of sarcastic poking at our oppressors just flipped the light switch on for me. And really from that moment on, I didn't become a sister until years later in 95. But from that moment on, I started to use my gayness and drag, certainly, and humor to create a kind of social activism, even when I wasn't, you know, protesting or doing something concretely right. activist, just to let my presence be an art form that agitated for change by existing, just by existing. Like Larry Kramer's famous quotation, every gay kiss is a revolution. Everyone who crosses the gender line in their garb and their behavior and their appearance is a revolution in a sense. So that was my first pride.
Wow. So for some people, they look at pride as a celebration. For other people, they look at pride as a remembrance.
Yes.
Ooh.
So yes, that's all right. You don't go to an art
look at it as both.
You don't go to an art museum and expect to just see pictures of daisies, right? You know, some pictures will be sweet and lovely, and some pieces will be like Goya and Goya's expressions, paintings about war, what's her name, Frida Kahlo, what's the German impressionist wood carver? She did these great etchings. I'm forgetting her name, and she's my favorite from that era. Anyway, they all did things about war, and they were very disturbing images. Goya with that awful picture of Saturn devouring his children. It's all some things you'll find are disturbing, some things you'll find are uplifting. And Pride is the same way. It has a lot of different pieces, all of which are important, all of which have meaning. There's a big controversy. I don't know if I'm leaping too far ahead, Shirley.
It's okay. Go for it, because I'm getting there.
Online, maybe because Pride is online this year. We're not doing the physical Pride here in Los Angeles still because of COVID cautions. But there's a lot online, a lot of discussion online is going. There was a meme going around that was about kink and leather and S&M being part of Pride. And this happens every year, but it kicked up more this year. And the argument being, kink is sex and sex shouldn't be around Pride because Pride is public and there are children and families and they don't want to see that.
And well, that's what they said about the first Pride parades.
Yes. Yes. And ever since. And drag queens and guys in their little skimpy bathing suits. I'm going to look on my phone and see if I can put it on Instagram.
One of the things that I tell people is that, yes, I do mainly work with the LGBTQIA, but I also work with the kink community, the BDSM community. It's like you're a community. You're part of everybody's part of this bigger, gigantic community. And when I started seeing these memes going around going, they shouldn't be part of us, I'm like, when did us become a smaller circle? Because
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. The Radical Fairies years ago had this big controversy about Short Mountain, Tennessee, the Radical Fairy Commune in Short Mountain, Tennessee. And were women invited? Were women welcome? Can women be fairies? And the conclusion I drew from that is the same one I apply here. There are tribes within our tribe. And our tribe right. exists within the broader human tribe, right? And I think that it is important for, and especially women and feminists who go to, say, the Lilith Fair and events like it, it's really, they know the value of this. It's really important to gather with your tribe. And it does mean being exclusive because you need to focus on those of you who share the characteristics, the value of that tribe, the ceremonies, the rituals, the identities, the practices of that tribe. Does that mean that all other tribes are bad or to be eschewed or shunned? No. There's a time for gathering in your tribe. Then you take the energy and the gifts of that gathering and you open the circle, like you said, and you share those with other tribes in a bigger circle. And if that bigger circle is LGBTQIA, then that tribe opens and shares those gifts and hopefully changes things for the better in the broader human tribe. So it's fractal. It's perfectly fine to drill down and to go back up. I mean, you really do need to do both. And that's how we get cross-pollination. That's how change happens. Change for the better happens.
You know, I've heard that, you know, when one of the first things I heard, one of the first prides that I went to, somebody assumed, which you should never do, because of the people I was with, that I was straight. And I was like, and they said that straight people shouldn't be there because it had nothing to do with them. Yeah. And I was like, you don't know what an ally looks like. You don't know what a, you know, we need everybody. It's the big tent, the big tribe. It's like, we need everybody in here, or it just, then it gets so small that it's useless.
I can understand those who wish to have pride for ourselves and have time away from straight people, because straight people get everything and everywhere. And I think that's fine. I think it's negotiable. I think there is an equally solid argument to have straight people there. Great to have bigger numbers so that our opponents, those who want to, you know, wipe us off the face of the earth, realize, oh, you can't wipe that many people off the face of the earth. This is a movement. That is important too. I think it's important for straight people who are completely unfamiliar with us to get familiar with us, to come to Pride and be like, oh, this is a whole different paradigm. I mean, for one thing, one of the arguments about this meme, let me read the meme to you, the one that's going around that causes all this discussion. The purpose of Pride is to find safety in numbers and put pressure on social political barriers with visibility and protest. The reason it isn't family friendly is because you believed we did not belong in your families. Family friendly has become an anti-gay dog whistle. Certainly that's true. Remember the Reagan administration when family values became just a euphemism for fuck people of color, excuse my language, screw people of color, screw LGBT people, unions and women, you know, family values and push all those people out back into the margins.
And in some cases, it feels like it's slightly sliding back that direction again. So,
Make America Great Again is exactly referring to that. Make America white again, straight again, male again is what they really mean.
Oh yeah, totally.
Let's not beat around the bush. Let's be clear about it.
Exactly.
We know they mean that. We know they want to go back to the days where Anaheim, the home of Disneyland, was also in the 20s a headquarters for the Ku Klux Klan.
Right. Nobody likes to talk about that. No, they talk about it, but in just their own little group.
It's scary. It is disturbing, and it must be talked about. Thank God the Tulsa riots, the Tulsa massacre, is now hitting the level of documentaries and national regular channels and broadcast networks talking about it and doing programs on it. Thank God it's gotten to that level. It's horrible to face these things. It really does. It is upsetting, and it feels terrible, and it should. So it doesn't happen again. And so that it informs the decisions we make about our Black citizens and our LGBT citizens and our female citizens and our trans citizens today, because guess what? they're still experiencing racism, misogyny, and homophobia today.
And, you know, a lot of people assume that nothing happened before Stonewall. That's all they know about. If you're going to talk about, you know, gay pride or LGBT or anything like that, the first thing anybody brings up is Stonewall. Like, nothing happened before then.
Here's the thing that has been so true during Trump, and it really started in my observation. I love history. It started in Nixon. In Nixon's administration, they discovered that uneducated, less educated people vote conservative. More educated people tend to vote liberal, Democrat, right. Republican. And so they started to hammer away at... excuse me. It didn't eat beans. It's just my cat.
Yes, I'm aware of the chicken.
Like so they start to hammer away at the national funding and national support for education in America to the point where it was possible for Trump to pull the wool over people's eyes because people, enough people haven't had a sophisticated enough education, especially in things like history that matter. So they don't know what the complexities of history are, and they don't have the skills of analytical thinking to go, wait a minute, I'm seeing this on television, let me think about it, and let me compare it to what I know from my schooling to see, to judge it and assess it. Now it's like, oh, he said that, and he's famous, and I know him, and so I think I trust him, so I'm just going to go with that. And so that's how you get in our community. That's how you get a lot of younger people assuming that Stonewall was sort of it in the beginning. And I've had the same experience you're talking about where you start to talk about the Black Cat riots here in Los Angeles in 1966 or the Compton Cafe riots before that in San Francisco, which was a trans riot. And people are like, oh, I didn't know. And it's important to know because when you know that there were riots all the way back, even that there were gay communities and gay resistance in the 40s, 30s, 20s.
Exactly.
There was a gunfight here in a gay club in Los Angeles in the 1940s. There was a high-end gay club that became Spago, where the Swifty Lazar held all of his Oscar parties for many years in the 70s and 80s, like the height of high culture in Los Angeles, and that had been a gay bar in the 40s. When you know that, it makes you feel there's room for you to be in the world and room for you to be who you are, because you see that there always has been room.
One of the networks did a whole series on gay culture, and whereas a lot of times when you watch shows like that, they kind of start in the 60s, sometimes 50s. Right. They actually started in the 20s.
Yes, and before.
And before. They actually started in the 20s. They had some pictures of before, but their basic, you know, that was the easiest place to actually find, if you could find, like, movies or little tapes and things like that. And I was so excited when I saw it. And I was so excited because the person that told me about it was the last person that I thought would ever go, you should probably watch this. This is really going to impact you because I'm also a history buff. But, you know, I'm sure that, well, I hope that the people that did get to see it and have taped it or whatever, you know, get to see. We didn't just pop out of, you know, you didn't just pop out of the 50s and 60s. That there was there was other stuff there way before.
King James always of England, King James the VI of Scotland, the one who was responsible for the King James Bible. He came after Elizabeth I, Queen of England. He was gay. He had two lovers.
You never, you know, and people would go, no.
Right. Tchaikovsky, gay. Never did anything about it. He hated himself for it, but gay.
Well,
you know, makeup was around certainly from the time of the Egyptians onward.
Yeah.
Like there weren't trans people and drag queens and gay people and lesbian people and asexual people and intersex people, which is a function of biology, as if those things didn't happen since the dawn of human existence. Please, Shakespeare was writing for drag queens. This whole thing, like it was 13-year-old boys because their voices were higher. Screw that. Nuh-uh, honey. You read Much Ado About Nothing, or watched it, the Kenneth Branagh one, which is a little sentimental for my tastes. And you look at the character of Beatrice, and remember that was written for a male of whatever age, it was written for a male. And all of a sudden the sharp sarcasm of her lines clicks into place and you go, wait a minute, that was a read. She's doing drag queen reading. And then you remember that in Shakespeare's day, no women were in theater, and that theater itself was kind of edgy, wasn't allowed in the city. They had to build the theater outside the city limits. You know, it was the scuzzy types in the low down bars, right? Well, where do you think the drag queens were? Shakespeare was writing for drag queens. And the highest high of the English language's literature and art was written for drag queens to perform. We have been here.
It's like they say, you know, we have to keep gays out of the military because they've never been in the military before.
Sparta.
Are you kidding me?
Sparta. what was the legion called where they paired couples, gay couples up? The Lover's Legion or something in ancient Sparta?
Yeah, it's like...
Because they knew they'd fight harder because their lover's life was at risk.
Yeah, it's like, are you kidding that there's never been gays in the military?
Right. You just have to leave through Tom of Finland's art, any compendium of his art, and you're like, oh, gays have had an affinity for the hyper-masculine, you know, for eons, like they're
exactly.
not in the military. Please!
You know, I know gays that are now that are in the military, and they still feel like they have to keep it a little more low-key. Some don't care, but, you know. But,
yeah, well, we've had 4 years of setback. 4 years of an open door for people who have knee-jerk emotional reactions, violent reactions against that which they don't accept, can't accept in themselves, acting out against other people. And they just had an open door to have all the reactions they want and to organize into groups and to do all of that. So, as much progress as we had made, I can well understand that people are cautious now.
These days, since most of Prides are kind of a hybrid, some are indoors, some are outdoor. Like you said, most of Los Angeles are outdoor. Do you think it's easier if it's an outdoor, if Pride can be celebrated outdoors, like for the parades and for the events? Or do you think that we're still in an opportunity where maybe this year we needed to keep it back in?
I don't equate indoors with hidden or less visible to enemies. It really depends. Las Vegas Gay Pride, I went to, I don't know, over 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And there was a parade, and then the pride was the next day. The parade was at night, so it would be cooler. It was 100 degrees at like 9 p.m. I remember walking, I was in like all white, you know, hopefully to get cooler. And I was like, you know what? I've done Pride in so many different places. I've never marched in a toaster oven. It's strudel. Sister Pop-Tart. And so the Pride the next day in the sunshine, you know, there was no way. So they had it inside in a conventions, air-conditioned convention center. So there's just practical considerations. It really depends on what your community is like and which space is going to gather you best and lift your energy best. Like, which play belongs in which theater? Well, Pride is sort of turning. Like, what's the arena or the place that is going to give you the easiest to organize logistics and that will enhance the joy of the celebration? Security can, I mean, if you're in Waco, Texas or something, like security, yes, can definitely be part of your considerations.
Absolutely.
It's hard to give a blanket statement because what's going to be completely safe in Los Angeles is not going to be safe in San Antonio necessarily or Waco. So you have to judge for your own community.
So whether it's, you know, inside in a convention center or outside in an outdoor parade, doesn't really matter as long as you're celebrating or making the most of it for you.
If the logistics work and the venue is fun and joyful, supports the joy of the celebration, then it's the right venue, whether it's indoors or outdoors. And security is a consideration for that. It all depends on each community. Each you know, there's so many wonderful organizers of Pride. So many people step up to the plate to provide this bonfire that creates a beacon, this lighthouse that broadcasts this awareness that we are a community, that there is a large number of us, and that we're here waiting for you to come and be with us to the outlying areas where they don't have prides, where there's a kid who thinks that he's the only one who's that way, or a trans person who thinks that they're the only one, or that pride is just for gay people and not trans people. And then they see this pride celebration and they see the trans sections of the parades and the trans floats, and they realize that they're part of a community too. So many people who have stepped up to the plate to provide all these opportunities. I really honor them and I thank them for sacrificing time and energy to create our community from whole cloth. I mean, really, wasn't it the first prides that were one of the forceful ways that all of us not in New York City, Los Angeles, and San Francisco knew that there were more of us and that we were organized?
Right.
Yeah.
So since you grew up, I know that you grew up on the East Coast.
Assuming I grew up, yeah.
True, very. Do you see a big difference between how Pride is celebrated on the East Coast as to the West Coast?
Oh,
or just how celebrations, you know.
I was at New York Pride. I was at the Stonewall 25 anniversary Pride. And some early prides were in Boston, Boston Common. And when I think about them, the real differences were sort of geographical, architectural. You know, the streets echo more in New York's Pride Parade. And in Los Angeles, it's more like sunshine. and the festivals have a slightly different feel. Boston and New York are cities and you feel the city all crusted around you. So your festival has sort of taken over the heart of the city, like in Boston, certainly. And in Los Angeles, it's in West Hollywood. So you feel like we're in our neighborhood, not invading the center of the city. So it's like we've turned the city gay and more like we've become the epitome of the expression of our particular town. Granted, West Hollywood has straight people in it, I've heard. Downtown LA Proud, which is, like 5 years old now?
Mm-hmm.
Feels more like it because you're in downtown with more urban buildings around you. So that feels like New York and Boston. But the spirits of them are the same. There's the same balance between community and corporate presence.
Right.
And the same debates about, you know, gay police are welcome because we're even part of this institution versus, I don't care what for their preferences, they're police and they're part of a racially oppressive institution. That debate is still in each of our cities.
And it will be for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. They're more common. In my experience, they're more common than they're different. The biggest differences are between rural ones, smaller rural ones, and the big ones.
Because, you know, I know that
you get more.
I've seen smaller and smaller towns start to do.
Thank God.
Little pride parades.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine the town I grew up in having a pride parade.
Oh, right. I was Portland, Maine. I grew up in Maine. In Portland, Maine, when I grew up, was the land that time forgot. It was stuck in like the 40s, in the 1970s. And then in the 80s, it started to change. And in the 90s or in the 2000s, really, our community just sort of took over the city. It's like just saturated with LGBT community in Portland now, especially the trans community. Portland, Maine, great resources, great number of trans members of the community there now. And the city feels entirely different than it did when I grew up. So I know what you mean.
Yeah, I still can't imagine them having a pride parade there.
Do they?
No. As far as I know, they do not.
I think you need to take a trip home in June.
Oh, yeah, no.
With a few flags.
Yeah, not this year. But
are there sister houses around where you grew up? Maybe you could invite them and have a nunvasion.
A nunvasion, see. Mm-hmm. See, that would bring people out, an invasion.
Right. If there's a House of Sisters in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and Greenville, South Carolina, it's possible.
Yeah, because the closest house is in Seattle.
Ah, you're in Washington. Well, there was a house in Spokane. It didn't end up succeeding.
Other side.
It didn't end up succeeding, but there was a mission in Spokane.
So how many houses are there, U.S. and international?
I believe in the U.S. and Canada, there are now upwards of 56, maybe 58 houses.
Wow.
Starting from the one in San Francisco, and up until 2006, there were like three. And then in 2006, houses started to cooperate because new houses were starting to begin, and we wanted to create a support system for them. And internationally, I believe we're in maybe 9 to 11 different countries. France, Germany, I've all had them since the late 80s, and multiples. Poland, I believe the Czech Republic, but it might have closed. Romania has one person. Belgium, Switzerland had, I don't know if they still have. Austria either had or has. Australia has three. Uruguay, Colombia used to have one in the 90s, but I think it folded. I feel like I'm missing somewhere. We had a mission in Thailand at one point.
So most how often do Ukraine, the houses get together? I am guessing that the international may not as often, but how often do the U.S. office or do the houses get together?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, until COVID, there was an international conclave every year. And in fact, June of last year, right about now, it was to be in Paris. And I was going to go. But there was a virus. Didn't come from me this time. It came from a goddamn bat. All right,
so we're hoping that they, start getting that going again.
Yeah,
because that would be a great international just to see all the nuns and the outfits and the because yeah. I know that every house has their own. Their own hat.
Are they going to change with Pride? Will they be exactly as they were, or will they be something different just because people seem to have changed after COVID? Will there be, I hope there will be some kind of increased focus on racial inclusion and racial issues. I hope BLM becomes a part right. of expressions in Pride, even though it's not necessarily about LGBTQ. The misogyny and the ego behind the homophobia and the transphobia we experience is, I think, the same trigger and ego and demand to have things their way that's behind racism as well.
And it's that's something
my
that
world and everyone has to do it like I say they have to do it.
Right. That doesn't help at all to
right.
anybody.
That's behind, that kind of belligerent reaction to fear is behind all of our oppression. And that's why pride is one of the torches in the dark against that ignorant fear. And we have to support the other torches of other causes because we're all fighting the same ignorant fear in the same people often. And that's why I think the intersectionality is key. Our movement needs to support the Black Lives Matter movement. Both movements need to support the stop killing and beating Asian people in the fucking, in the damn streets movement. And both need to support women's rights over women's lives and bodies movement because they're all combating the same ignorance and fear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So since this is also a mental health show, which I would never say that.
Oh, let me get a bowl.
do you need a little mental health? What is it that you do?
I'd like some more.
Exactly. What is it that you do to help yourself just kind of chill out and calm down? And when Sister Unity, you go for the rubber chicken.
It's an important question. Mental. Taking care of your health, especially your mental health, is key, certainly for activists, but it's key for any endeavor. You got to get the wiring flowing smoothly, running smoothly. And for me, it is varied in severity at different times in my life. There was one year where I was facing anxiety and depression that was so strong, I needed to take the help of some medication. And that gave me an experience of myself that I hadn't really, I wasn't that familiar with, a kind of evened out, contented feeling. And so I had that, and then my insurance ran out. But at least I'd had a state that I knew I could aim at. I could remember what normal. I could remember what contented felt.
Yes.
Because it's all normal. I mean, there's divergent wiring so pervasive that I have to think that it's all normal. It's all expressions of nature in one way or another. So I don't like that word, but I could remember what contentment felt like, and I could aim my inner thing at. This is the thing about the mind. One of the things that helped my mental health immensely, and hypnosis speaks to this, is the notion that you don't have to sit there experiencing your mind the way your mind shows up to be experienced. You can actually master your mind and your psyche, and you can work with it in a way that doesn't mean that, like, oh, depression, I'm going to tell you to go away and you'll go away. It's not that simple.
Right.
But there are techniques that you can employ and practice over time that give you much more of a handle on having a choice about where your mind and heart are going to go. I am able now sometimes to see when my feelings are going down the self-critical, self-destructive path and go like, oh, no, honey, that way lies madness. No, we're going to go over here. Whether it is then turning to music. For me, I practice Hinduism, so I've got spiritual practices. Or even just a video game or a magazine just to get the mind off of the habitual picking on myself.
But at least you know you well enough by your past experience to know that if you can feel it coming on, this is what you need to do.
Yes. Part of getting hold of your own mind, your own psyche, like I'm describing, part of that, real important part of that, is self-awareness. What does happen in me? How am I built? What is my wiring like? Who am I? Who am I is not just what do I like and what do I like to do? What's my type? Who am I is how did I end up getting built? Well, you don't have to. I mean, a lot of people fault themselves for the things that go wrong in them in their psyches. My nephew is bipolar and schizophrenic, and he just feels so down about himself for it when it's not his responsibility in any way whatsoever. It's just
not at all.
He ended up with. Right. So you work with that. So the self-awareness of, okay, I have this particular condition, or this is how I'm wired. And I notice I have a habit of getting down on myself about it. So that's a thing that's on my landscape. And I notice that I take care of myself by drinking or drugs, or I eat food to assuage it, or I play video games to assuage it, or I pick my nose or like whatever. I react towards it and soothe myself by doing X, Y, and Z. So now I see a picture of how I'm working right now. And then you can make choices and you can be like, well, I don't really care about that. I think I'm going to go to bathhouses as a way of soothing myself. Or you can be like, you know, the alcohol is starting to wear me down. I'm going to make a different choice. And I need help making that choice. So let me look for resources. Oh, here's this great radio show online with this hypnotherapist who wants to be my fairy godmother. I'll use that resource. Here's AA. I'll use that. A lot of people have been able to switch and make their choice through that. I'm going to use that because they've got a method that I can employ. So like that. But the first step is self-awareness. You have to sort of do an inventory of like, what's going on with me? What am I doing right now?
And one of the things that I like to tell people is that if I'm not your source, I will help you try and find a source.
Yes.
You know, it's not all about me. It's about helping you find your group. What is it that you need? It's not what about I need. You know, it's about, you know, the history of you and what are you using or abusing that can help you get back on track.
I think of it as like being your own parent in a way. Like, look at yourself as though you are a beloved 5-year-old, 3-year-old child, your nephew, your niece, your own child, like whatever works for you. But then how would you take care of that child? So then do that for yourself, because that's you.
Exactly.
That's the way you would take care of someone that you cherish. If you can't feel, oh, I love myself, I cherish myself. If you like your sense of self isn't there, that's okay. But make logistical, practical choices about your self arrangements, food, sleep, exercise, where you live, what conditions you're living with and in. Make choices about that as though they were for someone precious to you.
Okay. Yeah. And that makes, you know, I tell people, for a lot of us still locked in, you know, call a friend. You can Zoom a call. You can video a call. You can have dinner night. You can have movie night. Unless it's me connecting the movie, which, you know, that's a whole nother story. But, you know, I mean, but you can still connect with people. You don't have to be alone.
That is correct. That is correct. I mean, it's really hard with people dealing with depression. That is very, very hard. I had a friend, unfortunately, I had a friend who recently ended his own life after a long battle with depression. He was 57. He'd been battling it since high school. And he was a nurse. He knew what to do. He'd tried everything and nothing worked, unfortunately for him. But one of the bugaboos that bedeviled him was that he felt like he was a burden on other people. And
right.
That caused him to pull away from me and pull away from other close friends who would have done anything and everything for him. And so with depression, there's that. So
right.
In a period when you're not in the darkest of places, if you can understand, like I said, be self-aware, if you can understand there is this thing I'm going through and it's going to come around again because it has, I've seen the cycle. So let me now avail myself of some resources to prepare for that next cycle.
Right.
As opposed to just sort of like letting it roll in and out like the weather, like, oh, here comes another thunderstorm, batten the hatches, I'm going to disappear for a while. You can disappear, but before you do, make some phone calls.
Right.
Say, this is going to happen.
I can feel it coming.
Yeah. Let's set up some things for me.
And those are the things that, you know, that I like to help people with is the batten down the hatches. If you feel it coming on before, because, you know, anybody that's had any type of mental health, even if it's, you know, I don't want to say anxiety because anxiety is just as bad as everything else, but, you know, you can feel it coming on. It's most people. I would say most people can feel it coming on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The most important thing is that
this
to feel it.
This isn't true for everyone, particularly people who have like a genetic or chemical depression condition. But I have found with some friends going through depression that in the times when they are able to connect, or I texted, reached out to them, you know, they didn't reach out to me, but I just happened to reach out to them and they responded. Conversations tended to bring them out, at least for the time being, tended to like take them off the sort of the needle in the record groove, getting stuck in the habitual depression, the habitual messages like, oh, I'm in so much pain. Oh, I wish this would end. And then you feel bad about the fact that it's continuing and not ending. And it's just, you know, it's like a feedback loop. So interrupting that is the thing. So if you can get a couple of trusted friends when you're not in the rut and be like, look, and when I disappear, see if I'm in a rut and distract me, pull me out of the rut with, you know, ice cream,
exactly,
with anything, corn, anything, whatever.
So one last pride question before we go. I know I just took us way out of one into the other and then whipped us right back in again. So since as a sister, you manifest into your face and your outfit, mm-hmm. Does that generally make your pride or your sense of pride last longer? Since you're out in the public more in your sense of sister unity.
So part of pride before I was a sister was about expressing myself and my excitement by running around everywhere and flirting and really trying hard to get some nookie.
yes.
And pride is absolutely for that. Back to the thing about the kink, pride is about kink. It is about sex. There's also place for family and place for children to experience what is appropriate for them to experience in our community, in what being gay, lesbian, trans, bisexual, asexual, intersex is about. There's room for all of it. Well-organized pride festivals have room for each in appropriate places. It can be done. It is done. It has been done for years. So just to make the point that there is room for sex and sexuality and pride, because it's part of why pride started. We were criminalized because of our love of sex with each other. So we push back against the puritanical society that doesn't even want to know that it's having sex. Republicans, closeted Republicans, right? So that said, I do miss that as a sister, because when I'm a sister, I'm talking to people, I'm supporting what's going on. It's a different vibe. So I miss the other part, the secular part of me running around and enjoying the flirtatious nookie pride. But the pride I feel, that, like, getting a chance to be who I am, because this is who I am. I'm not playing a character. This is an expression of a big part of my psyche. So this is who I am and how I look like. And pride is a perfect place for me to look like I know I am, express myself as I am. And because I am a sister all year round, I carry the same feeling I get being me at pride in all those manifestations throughout the year. So I don't call them pride, but the same vibe is in me in pride that is in me when I'm manifesting at other times.
Thank you so much for coming on my show today.
You're very welcome.
It has been wonderful. Yay!
Pride gives us the chance to recognize, to be ourselves, and then recognize what that feels like. And then we can carry that through the rest of the year. Look for opportunities to feel like we feel and to purposely manifest it, because we had a practice run during Pride. So important.
Exactly. So I hope to have you on my show again. And and you have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day and Pride season.
Thank you for inviting me on your show. I always enjoy talking with you. It's very important topics, and I wish your show much success in the silly times that I'm not on.
Thank you. Thank you, darling. So thank you for having Sister Unity on my show today. Remember, always take care of your mental state. Always check it out. Know that, you know what, I'm always here for you to help you, you know, make online appointments, find services if you may need them. You know, people are really hard on themselves, like we were talking about. So if you need anything, please call me or contact me at hypnofairygodmother@yahoo.com. Thanks for tuning in today. Remember to tell your friends about the show. And I promise I will see you next week. So remember to take a deep breath, hold it, and exhale a smile.
You're listening to the Hypno Fairy Godmother Show with Shirley Yance, only on LA Talk Radio.